It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're listening to the Patriot Nation Podcast.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Patriot Nation Podcast, co-hosted brought to you by Prize Picks. Download the app today and put in the promo code CLNS to get 100% deposit match. Also brought to you by Game Time. If you download the Game Time app, you can put in the promo code CLNS and get $20 off your first order. And today, as always, it's your guy Pat Lane with my boy Matt St. Jean. And today we have on a guy that's been on the show, I would say the last 4 years maybe running. You know him, you love him. He's one of the toughest graders. He's not like me. I'm not a tough grader. If you come to my class, I'm not a tough grader. Okay. But Thor Nystrom from Fantasy Pros, we love him. Okay. But he's a tough grader. And that came out. We'll talk about that today. But Thor, thank you so much, man, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. They might like me now, but if they know the grade I gave the Patriots, they're not going to like me, and they're probably not going to like me much after this show. But I am excited to talk it through, and always good to be with you guys, of course.
Yes, of course. Yes, and Matt Menino chimed in and said, unless your F stands are fantastic, I think we're going to disagree.
Let's just say that it does for the next hour.
Listen, and this is one of the things that I think is so unique about what you do. And before you get into why we did it, I think one of the things that's so unique about you is that you take your big board and you rank 500 guys on your big board. And by the way, every single one of those guys has a comp as well, which is outrageous. And these comps, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, these comps are not just like regular comps. These comps are like 1992 left guard from the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, like, we're talking deep pulls here for player comps. And so and then you stick by it. And so your grades are based solely on your top 500, of course, and based on where the player was picked. And so regardless of the process, and people say, well, you know, you can argue the process, and we can argue whether you're right or wrong, because everyone's been right and wrong about players, right? And so people that want to poke holes in your grade will say, well, you know, he had Malik Willis ranked as the number two overall prospect and blah, blah, blah. But then people that want to say, well, Thor kills it, because they're like, well, he had this guy and this guy and this guy. He was right about that. And so, of course, if you rank 500 guys, you're going to be wrong about some guys and you're going to be right about some guys. And so, but I love the fact that you stay true to your board, and that's kind of what everything's based off of.
The methodology there is as far as the grades go, it's like I have a modified trade chart that goes beyond the 257 this year in terms of picks, but that the points go all the way down to 500. So, you know, that not only, you know, gauging value of picks the next day, you know, as far as my board size, as far as how I saw them, but then the UDFAs as well, you know, it helps me with that. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, I tend to find out you know, after the draft, when I give, you know, because I grade on the curve, so there's 2 A pluses every year, there's 2 Fs, and then the other grades are evenly distributed through there, that, you know, the fan bases of the teams I gave the A plus and the A's to, like, in the radio stations there, they want to have me on to fluff their class up a little bit. And then, you know, it's the opposite way. You know, every year I gotta go on the stations and answer. I was on WEEI like a week ago, 10 days ago. I had to answer for my F grade. And, you know, it's just by my numbers, my metrics, my pre-draft board. So there's, you know, I could be wrong for sure. I've been wrong before. You mentioned one of them. I've been riding a lot of guys. I was the only guy in the industry that had Lamar Jackson as a top 5 overall player. Yep. his class. Arif Hasan recently put out an accuracy thing ranking the your top 100 guys on your big board over a five-year sample of individuals. You're talking to the guy who finished number one. So it's like, I have misses, have hits. You know, it just is what it is. And, of course, the day after the draft, you can't say, you know, that it's just your read on guys. Like you mentioned, it's 500. So you're making 500 predictions on outcomes that you don't know in advance. It's just my read today, right? Like, you know, the day after the draft, whatever. But they could absolutely be right on these. You know, that's the cool thing about the future has to play out. Right. You know, again, it's just, you know, I did the work on the guys and that was my take in the moment. So, yeah.
Well, I like that you grade on the curve the way you do, because it's very easy to just say this team got better because they drafted players. They get a B. But every team does that. So forcing, you know, two A pluses, two Fs, it kind of controls for the fact that every team is adding players here. So just because you got better, if you think you got better, if every other team in your division got even better than you did, that's not a good thing.
For sure. Yeah. You know, like all the stuff I do, you know, the 500 comps and then, you know, some of these different things, they're all a response maybe to things when I was like a kid or I was in high school, or I was in college and early on in my time in the industry where like, it was either like, why doesn't that exist? That's why for the 500 player board, the 500 cons, I just wanted that to exist before I had the opportunity to do it. So finally, I answered the own question with that. But then like with other things, like the grading methodology, you know, of like both trying to put, you know, metrics beside it that are, you know, were my pre-draft thing. So I'm not, you know, just sort of eyeballing it, but a couple other things in there, they're just responses to maybe pet peeves that I had about the draft grade cottage industry before I started doing this. And one of them was grade inflation. You know, it seemed like the lowest grades you'd ever see on some fall, it was like B minus, right? Or a C plus. Well, if you have all the grades clustered like that, how do you say, for the audience, the thing that you're reading for, you're hoping that someone who has done that work, you know, like you have a different job, you work, you know, you're a lawyer, you're an accountant, you don't have the time to all spring long and in the years advance of this, have watched all these different guys and then, you know, gone through us. So you're just going to that to try to get that person's opinion of how they see your draft class the next day. If you put all your grades, they're all A's and B pluses, you're not really telling the audience what you actually think about the classes. So that's why I ended up doing it that way. And then one other minorish pet peeve about it was you'd see artificial inflation of grades for teams that have more draft equity and an artificial deflation on the limited, scale of picks that grades that they were even giving out for the teams that had less draft equity. And so like, I wanted to remove, you know, that from it as well and try to more judge the ball where it lies, right? Like, you know, how did you do in the slots that you had? So that's, you know, that's why I ended up doing it that way. Even if it gets me a lot of crap from fan bases the next day, and you guys are great. The Patriots fans are great. The worst one ever was, do you guys remember the year when the Raiders with Mayock had three first round picks?
Oh God. And they took what they Alex Leatherwood was one of them, right?
That was the next year, I believe. This was the Jonathan Abram, Josh Jacobs, Farrell, yeah, in the top four. Well, brutal. Of course, and they, you know, and then the second round, the Clemson corner.
Was it Hayden? DJ Hayden? No, right?
I don't know. Mullen, I think. Yeah, oh, but like all those guys were in the top 40. Well, anyhow. You know, and you look the next day, everyone in the industry was giving them A's, A minuses, at worst B plus, because they had this metric ton of draft equity. So how are you going to say they didn't improve? Well, I gave them an F, right? Because in my opinion, and based on my pre-draft board, all they did was reach every single pick. Like Farrell, I had 15, 18 spots beneath that. Josh Jacobs, I had, you know, maybe 10, 15 spots beneath that. Abram, I had as like a fifth round guy. I didn't like Jonathan Abram. The game he had, I didn't see how it translated to the modern NFL. And then Mullen, so it was like when you looked at they had by far squandered the most draft equity. You know, my pre-draft board was saying, so I didn't really have a choice on that. It was just a metric thing. But yeah, I got, man, those Raiders fans came for me. They found my Facebook page and they were taking the pictures off it. And then like one of the guys, he made this graphic of like me getting tarred. You know, like, you know, like they were doing all this kind of crazy stuff. It was insane. But, you know, again, like I went on
every
Raider show that asked me, And that too. Not many people came back on the other side apologizing to Thor, but it's like, you know, you just have, again, you call like you see it. That's right. The job. So happy to talk about all that.
Also, but we have someone in the comments. We have someone in the comments upset that you call yourself Thor. They're upset that your name is Thor. It's like, this is your nickname. No, that's his real name, ladies and gentlemen.
I would pull out my driver's license right now if that wasn't weird, but or a credit card if it, you know, you guys couldn't steal it from me. But that's my name. It's on my birth certificate.
Also, we missed out on a great opportunity. Should have been entitled, the podcast should have been entitled Thor Hammers the Pats. I mean, like, I blew it. I just totally blew it. Yeah. All right, so let's get into the draft. Let's get into the Patriots draft and kind of where you, you know, what it looked like for you. We'll start with Drake May, and I said that you know, had comps to every player, and you did have real players for every comp, except for one, and that was Drake May. And I actually DM'd you because I thought it was a mistake, and it was not a mistake, but you had Carson Pentz as your comp to Drake May. And so just explain that and also explain why you had him as your – so you had him as your eighth overall player and as your QB4. So just explain why.
Yeah. So I don't like doing mashup comps, and I don't like doing like, oh, you know, poor man's version of, or like, I like it to just fit in the box. But like with me, I couldn't get one that I thought perfectly encapsulate, at least gave the reader like a good totem of where I saw it in my mind. That was like one dude. And like basically the, you know, and you also had the Carson, you know, so you put it together and then it's Carson Pence, but it, you know, Carson Palmer and Carson Wentz were the two guys I was trying to mash up there. And Palmer spoke to the upside as the pocket passer that you know, everyone sees in Drake May, and his ceiling on that, I think I see it pretty similarly to everybody else. You know, if that thing fully realized what that would look like at the next level, the arm talent speaks for itself. But I also, you know, he has that at you know, that people would be like, you'd hear him comp to like Josh Allen or Herbert or some of those guys. He's not the same kind of runner or athlete as those guys. Like, he's a tough kid and he'll grind out the short yardage stuff, I think, in the NFL. He can steal some yards, you know, if it's not there. But like, I thought that part was getting a little bit overblown. And so I was trying to think of someone where that better, you know, the athleticism element was more. So I saw more Carson Wentz in terms of that. And then also trying to not just like, I was a little bit lower on Drake May. So the Carson Wentz one also lowered the Carson Palmer a little bit, but you know, while embedding sort of the athleticism element, cause I thought, you know, that evoked more of a Carson Wentz as opposed the running thing, as opposed to, you know, say Josh Allen.
Well, like Carson Wentz too is such a, he alone, if you're invoking his name, can be all over the board for what exactly that means or how high the ceiling is, how low the floor is. Because, you know, we saw how good it could be and we saw how bad it could be with him. And I feel like there's a lot of that in Drake May. One of my comps for him, like, I thought he had some Jordan Love in his game where it was just like, you know, he has those moments where it looks really good and he's in structure and he has those out of structure moments and he's a good runner. But there's just enough of those holes in the game where it's like, all right, he's going to need to take a couple steps forward at the next level. And he isn't the overwhelming athlete that Josh Allen is. He's like, you know,
for sure,
90% of that or 85% of that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because like I, you know, all spring long, you know, of course I'm coming to you guys from Minneapolis right now. And around here it was all about, you know, the trade up and then what quarterback could the Vikings, you know, around your guys' parts, obviously it was not about the trade, but you know, what quarterback are we getting? And so the questions became, it was May and JJ because they were the two obvious best fits for KOC system. And so a lot of sort of stuff like that. And so you had a lot of opportunities to talk about Drake May before this. And the way that I referred to it was, you know, and this will hit Pat on the question about just ranking them a little bit, maybe lower than some other folks. The thing, they're not, how do you say, like those aspects of his game that I don't like as much, they're not nullifying and there is no guarantee that they remain there long term. And if they don't, he is going to be a superstar. But what I referred to them as was weeds. There's a couple weeds in that guy's game that just need to be plucked out. And so I was advocating patience for him early on, but whatever organization he went to, whether, you know, in terms of the speaking as him as a potential Viking, you know, it was more trying to get the the fans are at least prepared for that element of it, of like, yeah, the upside's really, really high, but it's like that initially there maybe should be a little bit of patience exercise there while some of those things get pulled out. The thing, you know, people talk about the glitching that you sometimes see with him, and that's, you know, something that needs to be worked on for sure. The thing that, one of the weeds that I was thinking about more though, like that if you exercise the first year patience, you're trying to pull it out right away, was I noticed that when sometimes he eschews his mechanics, even when it's a cleaner pocket, but that's not as prevalent with him. But where I saw it all the time was when the pocket was about to collapse. I love how he sets up immediately in the beats after getting that ball on shotgun. I love his little back pedal. You know, he doesn't square right away. He does a little back pedal. So he gets to see the releases and then the first few beats out of the entire field. Like I love that. And then I love the way that he is moving around to try to keep the half halo in front of him at all times, like in the beats after the snap, so that he has the runway to throw into. So I like sort of the way that he'll subtly move this way and that, cause, you know, just to sort of manipulate that pocket and keep that runway in front of him. But it was so all that stuff was good. It was like, but up until the moment when he starts to denote like, oh boy, Drake, the pocket's about to collapse. And that was where I noticed the fast forwarding of his mechanics. I'll put it that way, where it was like, but also a fast forwarding of his decision-making process. So it's like, Drake, we got to get this ball. We got to, you know, maybe before he would need to, he's got some more beats, but instead it's like, we got to, and then just totally eschewing. A lot of times the lower body wouldn't be there and he wouldn't even be squaring up some of the times. And you saw like the accuracy go down. You saw more balls throwing up because of this. That's the thing, that one of the weeds that I would work on. But just to the stats on that, last year under duress, 43.3% of 90 passes under pressure last season for a 7-5 TDINT rate and was sacked 28 times. That's just one element of the game. Again, like work on that. But you get those weeds out, you pluck them out early, you got a star quarterback, maybe a superstar quarterback on your hands for sure.
What would be your development path? You know, if you're a head coach or offensive coordinator of the New England Patriots, year one, year two, year three, how are you trying to develop him? And what are you trying to put around him on the field?
So I would tell him right off the get, like, and maybe this would be a mistake, but I would tell him right away, like, you are our long-term guy here. You are the face of the franchise, but we're going to go slow with you initially. Like, we don't want you going in there balls to the wall to, you know, you against Jacoby every day. It's more like Jacoby's going to be mentoring you, and we think that Jacoby is going to be starting early on in the season. And meanwhile, I would, you know, you're the offensive coordinator there, you're the quarterback coach there. I would, and of course, they went through the entire evaluation with him, so they know the elements of his game, obviously, that they love and what that ceiling could look like, but also the specific things to address. What I'm referring to as weeds, those guys, it would be like, I would have a, we're going to have a Thursday night movie session, Drake, like after practice is done, after everyone else leaves the facility. We're going to give you a big bowl of popcorn. We're going to sit down in front of the projector. Today, we're going to work on this. We won't call it a weed in front of Drake, but, you know, today we're going to focus on this element. And, you know, maybe we do the thing I just talked about that under duress thing. It's not enough to say, like, you know, and I never said this during the process of like, oh, he panics under pressure, because I don't think that that's what it is. I think that no one ever walked through with him in this moment. Like, you've done everything right to this point, but your receivers aren't separating. But now you're starting to denote it. Notice how often you are just that your decision, you're like, it's sort of a YOLO thing. And then you're just eschewing the mechanics. We need to have a backup plan there, because that's what I was sort of, it was sort of my theory for it, is like, he was never walked through that and you didn't see a backup plan with it. But it's like, Drake, in what moments there with the pressure around you, would you have another beat to square your shoulders, maybe survey? What moments should you just eat the sack? What moments should you see if you can get lateral at least outside the hashes and then just throw that ball away? Or go to the check down guy a little bit more, but like try to give him specific examples on the film while you're sitting next to him in your sweatpants and you're eating the popcorn. Like, here's a specific example where you could go this, you know, keep this in your head for when you see that on the field. That's how I would do it with him. And maybe in November, if he's developed a rapport with the guys, he knows the playbook well, you feel good about that, you pulled some of those weeds out. Then if you feel like he gives the team the best, then I put him out there. But I want to make sure that those weeds were pulled first. And I feel, by the way, the same way about the Vikings next year, where it's like, I'm not trying to rush anyone because I don't think they're going to be a Super Bowl contender either way. Like, if I was I know the Patriots fans really want to see him, but that would be my concern, is that the coaching staff and the organization feels like a pressure of, we gave this guy a top three draft equity, so we gotta toss him out there right away, show what he's got. Because I wouldn't want, you know, for some of these things to crop up right away and then some of those bad habits to get embedded.
Right. No, it's a great point. It's a great point. And I got to tell you, like, one of the things that I like about it, and of course, there's people upset in the chat, and I don't blame you. I don't blame you for being upset. It's okay. Also, James with the let's hope McAdoo is a weed whacker. But, you know, the thing for me is that one of the things I like about it, and again, it's an F, and I know it's an F, and people don't like that. I understand. But one of the things I like is that you readily admit that you certainly could be wrong. And not only could you be wrong, but that there's a possibility that, hey, I didn't like this guy here. That doesn't mean he's not going to be good. Right. And so, and I think that that's one of those things that we have to understand, is that these guys are rookies. Right. And so you see it one way, and I might see it a different way. And we're going to talk about Jalen Polk in a second, because I think that Polk is interesting. And maybe we can talk about that right after this.
I got a stronger take on that one, but with, I know you do. With me. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not arguing against, like, again, I think I see a ceiling like other people. What people need to understand in the chat is I put him eighth in QB4. It was a recognition of what I felt was the risk of the asset. I think I see the bonanza the same way everyone else does. It's just, from what I had seen at Drake May, I just thought it was a little bit elevated. And so, to be fair on that, of your own evaluation, you have to bake that in as well. So I thought that that was the most accurate representation of that, where I put him.
Okay. All right. So we got to take a quick break. Let's take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about Polk, because I know you have some stronger feelings about that one. And that's one of those things that that I think we can hash out, because I don't know if I disagree with you. I don't know if I agree with you, I should say. But we'll hash it out, and I think it should be a good conversation. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball, baseball, and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. You can pick LeBron, Aaron Judge, Connor McDavid, and Jude Bellingham all in the same entry. Prize Picks even offers injury insurance so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, Prize Picks will have your back and not count that as a loss. Now this week, I'm actually going with Aaron Judge, Rafael Devers, and Bobby Witt Jr. to have over 1.5 total bases, and I'm going with Kevin Durant for more than 28 points and Nikola Jokic with more than 10 rebounds. Download the app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, if you download the app today and put in the code CLNS, they will match your first deposit up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. All right. That's an old ad read. I got to get rid of that. LeBron James got swept out of the first round. But okay, let's
The fighting T-Wolves.
That's right. Killing it. They look fantastic. Killing it out there. Maybe they'll actually give the Celtics some competition in the finals. You never know.
Maybe
they can get there. Yeah. A little early to say that, but they're killing it right now. So, all right, let's get into Jalen Polk. Jalen Polk, of course, goes 37 of the Patriots. You had him as your wide receiver 19, 122nd on your big board. And for me, this is where, and of course, Caden Wallace is a whole nother story. I don't know if I disagree with you on the Caden Wallace one. But Jalen Polk, I think, is where we're going to see the biggest kind of skew of what Matt and I might think and what you think. So what's your reasoning for having Jalen Polk, you know, almost, you know, past 100 and then wide receiver 19?
Well, whenever, you know, my whole argument with it is, if Jalen McMillan doesn't get injured in September of this past season, that Jalen Polk, I don't think my ranking would have seemed outlandish at all. I think he goes there or later in the draft. Fortune smiled upon him when McMillan gets injured. McMillan had been the clear number two. In fact, the year before is closer to, you know, the targets and stuff with the Dunze. But like I said, Polk was always wide receiver three, was wide receiver three at the beginning of the year. And then he gets to step up when he starts getting more targets when McMillan goes down. That's when he went ballistic. But the end of it, you know, and it was against some of these crappy teams like you know, Michigan State's defense or Arizona's defense or Arizona State's defense or Stanford's defense. But at the end of the season, McMillan comes back and it sort of reverts back to he's Polk is the afterthought guy again in this really explosive passing offense that had, what, over 5,000 passing yards. Two active games in November there where he didn't have one catch. You know, the average that he had in November and then on in that season when they go to the title game was averaging, I had it in front of me, but under 40 receiving yards per game. You know, and again, most of that was when McMillan had come back. And also just as far – so that's the constitution of the offense, according, and the prerogative of one of the great offensive minds that we have in this sport right now, Kalen DeBoer. So smart at this. It goes from what was it, NIAA – however you say NIAA or however.
NAIA.
Yeah, easy for me to say. But, like, you know, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, and now he's the head coach at Alabama, you know, and then the Penix who – apparently Terry Fontenot was the eighth best player in the or higher, you know, according to reports on his board. But like, you know, that was the constitution of their offense, and that's what it ended up being. But as far as the projection, like, I don't see him, and I never saw him as an outside dude in the NFL. I see him as a bigger slot. I think you're going to get the efficiency. The part of his game that I like, I guess it's two things. That, you know, the thing that he's sort of led by, the hands are obvious. He has very good hands, and then he's got the acceleration. So, you know, you can get the crafty efficiency out of the guy who's not going to flub anything. But I just didn't see him as a dude that should be, you know, should be playing on the boundary, or certainly that would be a standout at that in the NFL.
I think guys like Polk can be hard to evaluate to a degree too, because, you know, it can be hard to tell exactly how fast he is, exactly how quick he can move, and what his capability as a route runner can be. You know, some people have him as a top 40 guy. Some people, like you, have him as a fourth rounder. And I think it's easy. You can get either impression from the tape. A lot of it is what you value in a player like this, too, I think. And I think he's interesting because there's some similarities to what, you know, Ron Wolf liked in receivers and what you get out of Jalen Polk. And I think that makes sense. But, you know, one of the things I read your piece on him, so I went back and watched his tape today. And what's interesting is that even from game to game, from rep to rep, his quickness, his suddenness, his burst out of breaks looks very different. And it's hard to tell what's going into that, because I think if he can be that guy who's, you know, given it a full go and maximize that route running ability, I think he could be a number one. I think he could be an X. I think he could play outside the numbers as a guy who's going to win with physicality. But also, if he doesn't quite have that burst, he is, you know, a second or third option who's going to play on the inside and be a zone beater, which is valuable, but not pick 37 valuable.
For sure. Yeah. And I saw more like the latter, you know, and it's, you know, I thought he was certainly draftable, you know, that he should have gone right around the middle there. You know, top of the fourth round, you know, is where I think where I ended up having, but like, I think he'll start in the NFL, but, you know, again, like and obviously with the draft equity, he will be starting. But like, I just saw it as more of that sort of big slot. And I do think he'll get the efficiency with it. But I want a guy where I can project more of the explosive element. And if in the slot, for me, it would either be the receiver, the slot receiver who has some sort of downfield element to their game, or it would be the big, you know, the big slot, the tight end dude that can stretch the seam. But like, I just see him as more of like the paper cut guy. And I know like the situation that he was in there, you know, I'm even arguing, maybe I suppose that he was miscast. He should have been the dude in the slot, or maybe he should have been in the McMillan role. But like the part that benefited him was Odunze got all the attention on the other side. Odunze was pressed maybe the most in the nation last year. I forget, but if not, it was certainly at the very tip top of this class. And by margin over the second guy. And then he always had the cornerback one over there, and then the shading of the coverage. So, you know, Polk got the opportunity to play against the CB2 when there was never any threat of a double coverage. And a lot of times there wasn't any help over the top. So it's like you could sort of argue it both ways as far as the role he was in.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because a comp that we saw a lot was Jacoby Myers. And I think he's got a little bit more speed than Jacoby Myers. But I think, As a Patriots fan, and this, my take on it as a Patriots fan is very simple. The Patriots have gone for, and allegedly they were trying to trade back, and not allegedly, they were trying to trade back into the first round. And I think they had their eyes on Xavier Legette. And I'm happy they didn't get him. And I'm happy they didn't get him for a very easy reason. They've gone after guys like Leggett for years. And they've struck out every single time they've drafted a guy like that. Every single time they've gone after a guy like Leggett, who's fast, isn't a great route runner, isn't super crafty, like, but he's like, you know, explosive and he's big and look at that guy and he looks great with shorts on and without a shirt on. It's great. That's awesome. But can he play friggin' football, right? And so, like, he can't. And then you can't develop him and it's a disaster. And so I look at Polk as a guy that can be that steady guy. Now, listen, is he going to be a home run wide receiver one pick? Probably not. But if he can be a consistent guy, wide receiver two, even a wide receiver three, to me, that's valuable for the Patriots because they haven't been able to find guys like that. And again, for me, and listen, you know, maybe that's not the value you want at pick 37, but that's kind of in my scar, like emotionally scarred brain, Patriots brain, where we've missed on so many wide receivers. I feel good about Polk because I feel like the floor is high, even if the ceiling isn't as high. But again, at pick 37, you want to get a guy whose ceiling is really high, who you think can be an all-pro. And I just don't know if Polk is ever going to really be that guy.
Yeah, and your point's well taken, because I agree with you that the floor is high on Polk, right? Like I said before, I think he's going to start for years. It's just, I guess my way of seeing it is out of the slot as the efficiency guy. Could end up getting a lot of targets with that, but you know, I could be wrong, right? Like, I mean, certainly on the Washington team that made the championship game last year, he was a boundary receiver. So we'll see if, you know, that ends up being the case again. But I agree with you. The explosive element is the one part of his game that I didn't really see. And I can't really project that to the next level. But I think you're going to get efficiency out of the slot as well. If I was them, I would have tried to do, you know, because, yes, I think, you know, it's a safer one as far as the floor. But I think you could have had the best of both worlds, for instance, by staying in your slot and taking Ladd McConkey, a guy who's got like a ludicrously high floor to me. And you also have the higher ceiling, at least, you know, my way of seeing those two guys. But, you know, we'll end up seeing him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, before we move on to the next one, because you mentioned Jalen McBone, do you think he would have been a good fit for New England with Drake May, or do you like the bowl winner with what May brings to the table?
Yeah, I mean, like, I know you guys have Pop Douglas, and, you know, you need bodies there, but it's like, you know, I'm curious to see how that goes. But McMillan, of course, is the pure slot. I think I haven't seen any of the calls because I've been doing the UDFA rankings. So did they mention they see him as an outside guy? I assume by where they took him that was the case. Polk.
They haven't really said. Okay. They're going to have some kind of camp this weekend, I'm pretty sure, and there's going to be press at one of the days, so we might get our first inclination of where they want to use him.
But as far as McMillan, I did have McMillan above him, but it would just be about, you know, but I see both those guys as slots to the next level. I just think McMillan is going to be better at it, you know. And speaking to the thing I was talking about before, last 2 years, and you know, as if you saw my draft grades column, but I have this stat in there, but the last 20 games, so there's 20 games last 2 years where Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk were on the field together and completed the game, 20 of them. McMillan had 124 catches in those games for 1,657 yards, 14 touchdowns. Polk had 68 catches, so nearly half as much for 1,210 yards and 9 touchdowns. You know, so again, like, but yeah, I just see both them as slots, and I just like McMillan more. Yeah.
I will say I've been studying up on what Alex Van Pelt did with the Browns and how they used like Amari Cooper. And there's a lot of plays where it's either he's backside one-on-one with a 3-by-1, or they get him into the slot somehow and dial up things for him that way. And there are a lot of routes there that I think Jalen Polk has shown on tape. So I think he's not Amari Cooper, but I think some of that stuff, you can ask him to do it and he'll be at least somewhat successful. But yeah, how they use him is going to be very interesting.
For sure.
So, all right, the next one's Caden Walls, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on the two offensive linemen. We could just kind of lump them together because they got drafted back-to-back, because I do want to get to Javon Baker as well. But, like, those two offensive linemen, I think we can both agree. I think we can all three of us agree that certainly Caden Walls was a reach. Now, the Patriots have said that they felt he could play left tackle, but I haven't heard that from anyone else. He played no left tackle in college. And so then the question becomes, well, maybe you did think he could play left tackle, but you took him at 68. Like, do you think you could have gotten him at 103? Like, did anyone else see that? You know, and so that to me is the question mark there. Now, again, maybe they believe that, but like, I don't know. It's surprising to me. Layden Robinson's fine, but like not the kind of guy I want to spend, you know, my top fourth round pick on.
For sure. Yeah. And that's sort of how I saw it. And it would have been, you know, some of these things, you don't know how it went down in the war room. But like the way that it sort of came across to me is that they were like, okay, you know, the third pick we decided on May. So good. We're, you know, coming out of there. And then it's like, they're heading into Friday. And it's like, that first pick is going to be a wide receiver, right? Like, you know, and they were, you know, you mentioned that they were possibly attempting to, I've read reports where it's like they wanted Leggett to fall to them, but then, you know, there's other ones they were, you know, thought they could get Snipes. They're trying to move up, mm-hmm. however it goes. But anyway, obviously that dream was dead heading into Friday, but it's like they stayed on that path of like, it's going to be a receiver. And I think they knew, I think the trade down would indicate, and I think they might've even, you know, said this. So like it's like they're at the very tippy top there for Polk. He must have been the next highest receiver on their board. I think I just would have, I think remaining more open to the possibilities around you, even if you see the prospects different than me, understand that on Thursday, that was when it was the gold rush for the offensive tackles. If it's me and I'm the Patriots and I'm seeing the environment I'm in where, you know, everyone's jumping over themselves, the trade up that I'm looking at from the top of the second into Thursday, it's not for Xavier Leggett. It's for an offensive tackle. If that's what you're, right. you know, a position that you're going to prioritize, it feels like they got caught on the wrong end of it. You know, like they took a different receiver. Fair enough. At least they traded down once, but then because they had done that, then the next pick, it's like offensive tackle. Well, all the good ones are already gone. Right. But then, so it feels like they just reached up on someone there and it just felt like they were, you know, and I don't know, but that's what it sort of came across like to me. But yeah, Caden Wallace, even at the point we were at in the draft there, what pick did it end up being with him in the slot? 68. Early 68. Yeah. It's tough, man. Cause we had the historic run of the offensive tackles early on. And then right before that end of the second round, Rosengarten goes and Sua Matea goes in quick succession. Now we're really in trouble as far as the tackles go. And if you consider Brandon Coleman a tackle, I consider him a guard, but play tackle, it's easy. You can do it. But then he just went one pick before you. I would have done something else there. Either get aggressive in the environment you were in, trying to get up with that second round pick to get into the back end of the first, to steal one of those other tackles before they dry out, or I would have something else. But it felt like they sort of had the worst of both worlds. And I obviously do not see Caden Wallace like they do. Not only am I, you know, if I'm wrong, people in the chat, feel free to clip this after the fact to make me look like an idiot on Twitter. It wouldn't be the first ones, but I don't, left tackle is not a thing for me with Caden Wallace. For me, it was like, maybe you'll see in camp if he can end up hanging at right tackle, but otherwise we're going to have to try him at guard. It was more the way that, like, I obviously did not like his tape as much as the Patriots. They obviously see something different in him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is risky for sure to go that far. And I do think, yeah, the Patriots got stuck in a weird spot here where, you know, you're picking around the right spot to get the wide receivers and the tackles you probably want, but they also go right in front of you both times and you end up reaching twice. And that's not usually a recipe for success, although it doesn't mean those guys can't be good. It just means that statistically that works out less of the time. I'm pretty sure Karan Amagaji from Yale was still on the board when they picked. Would you have taken him there instead if you were going to go with a tackle?
Yes, I would have. Yeah. And I think if he hadn't been nicked up, you know, and then missed the draft process because of that and could have played in the Senior Bowl and then he could have tested and everything, I think that kid goes quite a bit higher. But that was like, you know, from memory, that was like one of the very few tackles that you could get. Him and then Sua Matea were like, but Sua Matea, you could see that one so many different ways because he's like the big band outcome guy, you know, like the upside is there that he could potentially be one of the better tackles that come out of this class, or he could flame out immediately. So it's like, you know, you sort of had to take
a chance. Picking him is betting on your own offensive line coach, essentially.
100%.
Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. Like his technique needs to be ironed out and the consistency needs to be ironed out. But yeah, like with Wallace, it's just like a lower ceiling. And again, like, you know, at least my read of it, right? Like they obviously disagree with me if they're already talking about left tackle with him, but You know, at least you have the bullet of you can kick him inside the guard if it don't work out at right tackle, you know, even if I'm right about that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the thing for me is that the Steelers stole my draft because I really
– yeah.
I wanted the Patriots to trade up back into the first round and take Fautanu. I think that he was, you know, one of those guys at left tackle that really could be a stud. And again, I don't know. I know some people predicted him as a guard. I think that's insane. But whatever. I looked at him as, you know, as a really, really solid offensive tackle prospect that I thought was going to drop a little bit towards the 20s, and he did. And then he ended up there at 20, and it was like, man, you got to go get him. And then – they take Layden Robinson over Mason McCormick, who McCormick was one of my favorite watches because he just was like this mean little guy with a massive friggin' like cowboy collar just wrecking people on South Dakota State. And it was awesome. And, you know, Robinson, I think, has a chance. The interesting thing about Robinson and both Robinson and Wallace, every scouting report I read was like, yeah, they're not great. They're fine. They're not great. But they could be starting day one. And I was like, okay, like, they may have some talent. And again, I feel like it's similar to the Polk situation where there's not a high ceiling, but there is a decently high floor for both guys. Now, if you're projecting Caden Wallace as a left tackle, that's a pretty low floor, right? But like overall as a player and as an offensive lineman, it's a fairly high floor. And so that's the way I kind of looked at those picks. And I think maybe that's what they were going for was that higher floor, even if that ceiling was a little prohibitive.
For sure. Yeah. And with Robinson, I feel like there's been guys like that before that I've liked more in previous years, and I've gotten burned on it. And so I think you could argue there that maybe I was a little bit punitive with him in my rankings because of past, having something to do more with past experiences than anything to do with him. But like that sawed off, just like the strength coming forward from this sawed off dude is like springy forward, but like, you know, you start to think about him more in the NFL with the pass pro stuff. And he, you know, that was the one thing in college where it could come and go. And then it's like, if he, you know, the technique doesn't get better, you cross him up, the speed guys, that was my concern with that. But, you know, like I said, some of these guys in the past that were like that, I used to like that kind of guy more, and it just didn't work out a couple other times. So I could definitely be wrong on Robinson. He might be the exception, but I do like that aspect of his. It's like an alligator, and then it just like strikes. You know, it's like that's him coming out of the snap, and he has the long arms, and he has that north south springiness. I was trying to think of a better way to say it, but it's like that's what it is. Like I like him in the run game quite a bit, and I think, you know, you're talking about embedding the floor. I think that's the thing that embeds the floor. He gets on top of guys right away, and he gets to initiate the dance because he's going to get off the snap, and then those long arms that he has for a guard, deceivingly so for that more sawed-off frame. But that in pass pro, technique just needs to be worked on a little bit, and he has the length for it. So we just got to make sure when you're, you know, because some guys are just – and you guys know this – like Fashanu from Penn State was like the opposite version of this, where that's a guy who's more comfortable sitting back on his heels and then we'll shuffle with you. We'll just keep you outside of me. And he's like, you know, for like going for a Sunday drive. But when he has to go forward, like Fashanu, it's the other way where he's like, I don't know what to do. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. The feel is different. You know, even UFC fighters are like this. The guys where it's more, you know, when they're coming forward, they're more comfortable than when they have to sort of sit back and parry and stuff like that. And Robinson would be an example the other way. Can you get the feel for the pass pro better? Potentially, then he plays way up.
Yeah.
But I do wonder here how much input, you know, new offensive line coach Scott Peters has in this. And if there's a certain type of guy they're looking for where they think, hey, we know we can correct these issues. So we're okay reaching a little bit on this because we think he's going to turn into something better, you know. I think I've held for a while with how expensive offensive linemen are and how hard it is to get five good ones. And if you have a good offensive line coach, that might be the best value thing you can get in football because that's not a capped expense. And you can keep that guy for as long as he wants to be in football, and you can get a cheaper offensive line because of it. So if Scott Peters can be that guy and turn, you know, third and fourth round picks into starters there, that becomes a huge thing.
100%. Also, Pat Stats pointed out that Mason McCormick is not little. He is in fact 6'4", but he looks little. Just when he plays, he plays low to the ground. Maybe I don't know. But all right, let's get into your favorite pick. And the only pick that you didn't have is a reach for the Patriots. I think it might be everyone's favorite pick of the draft for the Patriots, and that's Javon Baker. Just, you know, picked at 110 and feels like a home run, slam dunk, you know, grand slam, all of the accolades you want to give it, because I love the pick. I'm very excited about it. And, you know, and obviously you seem to be excited about it as well.
Yeah, I love Javon Baker. I was hoping the Vikings would get access to him, but, you know, obviously that didn't happen and they weren't taking receivers. But, like, any fan base that got him, because you knew you were going to get him on a discount, because beginning of his career, he's the five-star guy. He goes to Alabama. That didn't work out. Then it seemed he transferred to Kentucky just for the shortest amount of time, and it seemed like him and the coaching staff weren't getting along his first couple weeks there. So he books it again, goes to UCF. And then it was like this, you know, in that offense that Gus runs, you recall like talking about Bo Nix and early in his career and the things that he had to do in the Melzon offense at Auburn that didn't suit Bo Nix's game, like sitting back in the pocket and then having to go through your options and throw it down the field, that element of it. Javon Baker, he was the leverage downfield dude. UCF didn't like John Rhys Plumlee. He's a great athlete. You know, he played center fielder on the UCF baseball team in addition to being the quarterback, and he's got the arm strength to get it down there. But the accuracy with John Rhys needs some work. And so Javon would all the stuff downfield. If it's 1-on-1, Javon Baker's coming down with that thing. He just tilts it so far in your direction. But I think the thing that people missed about his game is he has all this other stuff that UCF just did not have the accuracy and the timing in their passing system with the quarterbacks that they have in terms of that, for him to be able to show, for instance, his skill winning in the intermediate area consists, you know, over the long haul, just because of the constitution of the offense, and then breaking the tackles after he catches the ball. But I love his release package. His feet are just like crazy legs Hirsch. It's like, well, you know, the quarterback, it's like, you know, you're like putting him in a trance, and it's like, you're not getting your hands on that dude out the line. He also has the strength. Even if you get a glancing shot on him, you're not dictating the terms of that dance. You're not funneling him where you want to go. He's getting his free release, and then he's on his way. And he's got the burst. He doesn't – his downtown speed, it's not the greatest in the world, but he has that burst, and he knows how to stack corners is the other thing. So he'll get you behind – you know, it's like on the racetrack. You're not getting past that car, and now he's in front of you. So he gives himself the best look for it downfield. Love his hands. But, yeah, I just think that the skill set for him, it's more – fleshed out than he was given credit for, I think, but you know, by the draft public. The other thing about Javon's agent is calling me right now. I'll get to it. No, but the other aspect about it was that I think where the NFL overlooked, or not overlooked, but maybe waited a little bit too much, is I compare his Javon's personality to Stephon Diggs, who was another guy who fell further down the board, and my hometown team got to take advantage of that one. But it's the same thing where it's a dude who ardently believes he is the best receiver in this class. If you ask Javon Baker, he'll tell you, I'm the best receiver in this class. And he doesn't understand. He thinks we're the crazy ones, that right. We don't see it. Right. And he just wants the ability to prove that. But the, you know, it was the same thing as with the Diggs thing of like come another former five-star recruit that mm-hmm. fell down the board. And it, you know, it was like, is his, that part of his personality where it's, you know, very loud and very, you know, get me on the field. I want some of the stuff he said after the draft. It's like, Javon, maybe keep that part to yourself. You know, I know you're excited, but maybe keep that to yourself. Where, you know, like some teams may be thinking like, is that worth, you know, commensurate to the pick? But where you got him, that's a smash value either way. You know, you guys heard in the pre-draft process, you know, some of this stuff on the other side of it where people got upset with him, the blow and the kiss to the Oklahoma sideline was the classic one. So and good. every time I talk about Baker on any of these shows, I have to give this context because no one ever does. They're like, oh, you know, he's a showboat and all this stuff. It's actually not what that was. In that game, so Oklahoma goes to UCF. UCF at the time, I think it was 2-4. Oklahoma was undefeated. Oklahoma was a 22-point favorite in that game heading to down to Orlando or whatever. And the Oklahoma just scored. This is at near the end of the first half. Baker on that play gets deep, gets, you know, obviously takes it to the house to answer that touchdown and keep the game close heading into halftime. When he ran by their sideline, he like they couldn't contain him in the first half. And that's basically what he was doing. Like, I'm going to be here all day. Like, we're not going away. So the game goes into halftime where UCF is still like, we actually have a shot of killing Goliath here, you know. Yeah. And part of that was the energy that was in the crowd. UCF came within a failed two-point conversion at the end of that game from sending it into overtime against Oklahoma. They ended up losing by two because they didn't get that two-point conversion. But the only reason that game was close and it was like that was because Javon Baker went ballistic. And, you know, you get that other element of his personality sometimes where, you know, it can come across as showboating or it can come across as me, me, me. Same way with Stephon Diggs, right? It's just that's the personality. When the situation's right and things are going well, you never hear that stuff about Stephon Diggs. It's the same thing with Baker. So, like, if things are going well and all, you're not going to hear one thing about it. It's only if the situation goes the other way. But I really love his game.
Right.
He's fun to watch. When I think you need receivers who play with that kind of an attitude. You know, at the position, you play 100%. By yourself, away from the formation, a lot of one-on-one opportunities. Whether it's wide receiver or defensive back, I think you need a guy who has crazy belief in himself. And, you know, it's funny, you mentioned Stephon Diggs, you know. I think they're somewhat similar as players. I think Baker relies on the contested catches a little bit more than, you know, Diggs did. He's a little bit bigger of a player, but similar attitude, similar pedigree, taken at similar spots in the draft. Not saying it's a one-to-one, but you know, he has the error bars and what Javon Baker can be are very wide here. Positive and negative.
Yeah, but I'm like I said, I'm bullish, and I think he's better than Polk. You know, I know the factors that led to it going the other way. I knew Polk was going to get taken higher, but like, I think Baker is going to be the number one receiver on the Patriots and not going to take him along. Cause here's the thing. Like, people are like, Javon, shut up. Like, stop. But I agree with some of the things that he says that people are like, Javon, shut up. Like, I do. He's the best receiver in my opinion, that's on the Patriots right now. Like, right. And I think he's going to prove that. I think he's going to blow past Polk, and it's going to be more about, like, am I going to lead this team in targets this coming season? But, yeah, he's a really good talent. It's just you're going to have to work with him, you know, with some of the other stuff, because he's a guy who, you know, just like Stephon Diggs, he emotes. And so you just have to make, you know, work with him and have a good environment around him and understand that sometimes, like, he just has to – let off steam and maybe not take it some of the stuff he's saying too literally and seriously. Yeah.
No, it's a good point. It's a really good point. So I'm excited about Javon Baker. I think everyone should be more excited after hearing Thor. And so that's a good thing. Now, listen, we got to take one more break. When we come back, we're just going to blow through the rest of, we don't even want to talk about everyone, but this one guy I want to talk about. And then someone had a question about the UDFA. So we'll bring that up and then we'll get Thor out of here. By the way, I don't think I mentioned this at the top, but you can read Thor's draft breakdown on Fantasy Pros. Goes through person, player by player, has the rank. What I love about it is you, like, clip it and have the rank next to the pick where you had them as a position, and then you go through your explanation. So I like that a lot. So if you go on to Fantasy Pros, you can find Thor's AFC and NFC. Of course, Patriots are in the AFC, clearly. But you can see that, and then and you can go from there. So anyways, take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The Celtics are in the playoffs, and there's nothing like the atmosphere of the Garden during a Celtics game. And the easiest way to get in the building is by using the Game Time app. The prices on Game Time actually go down the closer it gets to tip off. Now, one of the nice things about Game Time is that they have all-in pricing, which means you see the fees up front. They're not hitting you with fees after you've already paid or as you get to the payout screen. They're giving them to you up front so you know exactly what you're paying. They also have the lowest price guarantee. If you find a price lower, they will credit you 110% of the difference. And they give you a seat view before you purchase anything. You can even move your phone around and see how it looks. So take the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code CLNS for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem the code CLNS for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. All right, we're back. Okay, so I lied to you. I do want to hear your thoughts about Jaheim Bell quickly, but we also have to hear about Joe Milton, what you thought about Joe Milton. Just super quick, taken about where you expected him to be taken. I just feel like he's probably just a backup quarterback, right? But he's such a fun backup quarterback, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Yeah. he's like Nuke LaLoosh. You know, it's like he might have the strongest arm for throwing a football on planet Earth. It's between him and Josh Allen. There ain't no one else. I mean, put them all. And those are the two. They had the record for max velo throw, you know, at the NFL Combine. Milton matched Allen for that 62 this year. But just absolute bazookas. And he's a crazy good athlete, too. I don't know if people realize how good of an athlete. Like, he's been – they clock him over 20 miles per hour. I think it was the touchdown run against Florida. I forget the long touchdown run, but the GPS had him really high. And then he'll do standing backflips before the game. Like, this guy's a stupid athlete with an absolute bazooka. But, like, you know, obviously he lost his job at Michigan earlier in his career to McNamara, then at Tennessee for Heupel, and then last year had it for the full season, but, you know, it didn't play as well as we wanted. And for him, and that's one of the easiest offenses as far as the progressions. It should have helped him with that. That's the one thing with him. It's, you know, he's a great kid. Everyone raves about him, loves him. Jim Nagy couldn't stop. It's like, Jim, you just met him one time. Like, you know, Nagy was talking about, like, how with all the helpers there in Mobile, like, Milton was going around and thanking them all and, like, just doing different, you know, thank you notes to people and stuff. So you love all that stuff. It's like, but he had the two good coaching staffs. And then the last one of the better, more QB friendly systems that we have, and where it cleaved the field in half for him. And some of the decisions still were not very good. And then the technique and the mechanics need to be worked on. He's one of those Lloyd Christmas, dumb and dumber. So you're saying there's a chance, there's a one in a million chance, or maybe one in a thousand. And the other realities, it could be quick for him. And then he's got to go down to the UFL, or maybe he doesn't even do football anymore. But there's one shot, you know, where if that light turns on and it's the right guy and it makes sense to him, he has all the physical ability in the world. You could argue that he is more physically gifted than even Anthony Richardson, who went number four last year. But he's way far away as far as the decision-making and then the vacillation of the accuracy.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. Matt and I have talked at length about him, and I love it. So, all right, super quick on Jaheim Bell. Just give us the, you know, the 30-second view of the Jaheim Bell pick.
Jaheim Bell is, you know, he's a guy you're gonna have to play at H back and or move him around. He can't play the inline. But if you want to delineate, you know, whether that or whether it's the big slot, you know, however you want to do that, that's where you would deploy him out of. And the thing you want to do with him, he has a very he's a very interesting prospect. Like, he is at South Carolina the season before. They had their injuries in the backfield were so bad, they just were like, Jaheim, can you play running back? And then Jaheim became the running back. And then at the end of the season, he was running for more than 100 yards. You have that element. You know, you just use him as the runner or, you know, the stuff the manufacturer and touches. But the thing, you have to get that ball in his hands, but that's where he could do some stuff. He breaks tackles, but, you know, and he's got, like, good vision as a runner as well. It's not like a crazy high ceiling. You know, he's not going to be – winning down the field. He's obviously short. The dimensions, you know, it is what it is. But, like, if you can get the ball to him short, intermediate, if he can justify not only getting on the field, but also I deserve a, you know, X percentage of that pie of the targets. But that's once you get him the ball, that's where his special sauce is, manufacturing the yards after he gets that ball.
Yeah, I agree. So, no, it's good. I'll tell you what, we got it. DKB right here, ready to be mad at Thor coming in, you know, just for clicks, but grades make a lot of sense. I like it. See, this is what we're talking about. That's why you're here, sir. And so, all right, here's a question here. Someone wants, who is it? Sumo Brockets wants your opinion on the UDFA signings. You don't necessarily have to grade them, but maybe give us, you know, your favorite or who you think could have an impact on the roster.
Yeah, my favorite one was Jontre Hunter, both in terms of where I ranked him on my board, but also, you know, the guy that I'm most intrigued by. And I recorded, you know, not only is my UDFA grades out on Fantasy Pro, the class rankings, but we also, me and D-Bro on our, my Derek Brown, my colleague, who's our top NFL guy, we had a draft show this spring, and we did 2.5 hours on the UDFA classes. And so I talked about this on there. It came out today on the Dynasty feed of the podcast deal or whatever. But if anyone wants to check it out, but that with Hunter getting a little bit deeper into it, calling him what maybe the strangest sort of off the wall evaluation from this class in a weird way. But the thing with him is he's a terrible athlete.
He is.
You know, 26th percentile by res. He misses a bunch of tackles. The last two seasons combined, he missed 50 tackles. And you cannot drop him into coverage, especially if he has to have his back turned to the quarterback. it was always bad when even in the Sun Belt, whenever that happened. And so it's like, well, why, you know, why do you have him the highest ranked, or why did the Patriots sign him? It's because that guy's good at one thing and one thing only, but he's actually super skilled at this, which is getting after the quarterback. If you put some, he's very clever with that, getting through the creases and the small things. He'll bounce off the glancing shot and keep his momentum going forward. Coming downhill with that guy is what you want to do. In the run game, if he could fix the tackling, for he gets there. It's just, but like, he lets so many fish off the line, but it's all the stuff is the downhill stuff, and he scared quarterbacks in the Sun Belt. So can he convince them in camp that skill is sufficient to at least convince them to give him the developmental opportunity to potentially be a blitzing linebacker in the NFL? That's his mission. I don't know if right now the tackling technique might be so bad you can't even use him on special teams. So I imagine that, you know, it's more convincing them of the practice squad spot in year one. But that skill of his of getting to the quarterback and putting the pressure on when he gets sent, it's sufficient enough and it's a valuable enough thing in the NFL that he might be able to do that. So that was the signing of theirs that I really liked.
Mm. I was going to say, if there's only one thing that you're good at, that's a pretty good one. Pretty good thing to be good at.
Not
if
a bad
you're
one.
Only good at one thing. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So we'll see. And I think it's an interesting class. And again, you know, and I know I keep reiterating this, but one of the things that I enjoy when you're looking and talking, why I like talking to you so much about this stuff is that when you come into it realistic. They're prospects. We don't actually know what we think. And so, yes, we have our opinions, and they are just that, our opinions. They're not a fact. We're not sitting here saying, you know, you're not sitting here, Drake May sucks and JJ McCarthy's going to be incredible. And so, you know, and that's one of those things that, hey, you had an opinion about this, I have an opinion about that. And then we'll see in 3 or 4 years how that opinion shakes out. And then, of course, sometimes it's like, well, yeah, I had that opinion, but the team, you know, ruined them. Or, you know, they didn't put him in the right situation. They didn't put guys around him. And there's a lot of reasons why a guy could fail too. So, you know, when you look in a vacuum, yeah, maybe we're not happy with the grades. But I think that the reason that you're skeptical is reasonable. And you also look at it and say, yeah, I might be wrong. And the Patriots may have done okay here, you know. And so, you know, so we'll see. But again, it's one of those things that let's have an actual conversation about the draft and look at it like a normal person, right, and say, hey, we don't know what we're talking about. We know we do, but we still don't. You know, even the guys that know what they're talking about don't know what they're talking about.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, NFL teams miss on guys all the time. What was the quarterback class, the last one we had with all the first round guys, and how many of them have flamed out? Yeah. Like, it just, you know, it just is what it is. And again, like, you know, it's just my take on the guys right now. And I put in the write up of the Patriots, even with the bad grade I gave them. I said, this is all going to come down to if Drake May is a superstar. And if he is, it doesn't matter what happens with the rest of the class. I'll be wrong one way or the other. Right. Yep. So, like, and on the other guys, you know, it's just, you know, again, my take. I was a little bit lower on Polk, a little bit higher on some of the other receivers, but just my take. And you know, if they prove me wrong, look, you know, like you mentioned at the top, Pat, making 500 predictions of 500 outcomes that haven't occurred. And I've done this now 6-7 years, you know, with the, I think it's, yeah, either 6 or 7, but I have eaten, can I swear on this or no?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, I'll say crap. I eat crap every year. Right. Like, you're going to be wrong on several every single year. The NFL teams, they only get 7 picks and they're wrong on multiple of them. So, and then their UDFA flyer, they're wrong about a lot of them. So it's like, yeah, it just is what it is, but it's a fun process. I cover, as you can see behind me, college football is my love. I cover these guys since they come out of high school, get years of exposure to them. And then, you know, the ability to sit down, watch their cutups, PFF Ultimate. I love that thing. It's just bang it all up, bang, 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 bang. And then, you know, you get their testing data and everything, and you can start putting this stuff together and ranking them against other dudes. I just love the whole process. So I love doing it. Patriots fans, I'm sorry for my grade. Understand it's the bell curve methodology. It's out of my hands. It was before the draft. But I wish them all the best. And I hope Drake May becomes a star because he's one fun player to watch.
Yeah, we appreciate that. If you don't know what the bell curve is, I teach it actually in high school. So go back to school, do a little Google, check out what the bell curve is, and you know, we can go from there. So, but no, it is fun. It's always fun talking to you. Do you have time to discuss the? Do you want to discuss the? I know you might have some strong opinions on it. The Austin Rivers comments on the.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So Austin Rivers, okay, gets on the Pat McAfee show the other day and says that he believes that there are 30 guys in the NBA that could walk into an NFL locker room and play immediately. But there are zero guys in the NFL that could walk into an NBA locker room and play right away. I think 30 is an insane number, by the way, just a completely insane number. What's your opinion on this, Thor?
I think there's one guy named Austin Rivers who wouldn't have been in the NBA as long as he was if his dad wasn't an NBA coach. What do you think about that, Austin? let's get some nepotism stats out of that wrong. Guy. Yeah. Yeah. And as far as the comment, it's just a weird thing to say. And especially for the source it's coming from, it's like, Austin, shut up. Why don't you let one of the good players say it? If you're going to say, you know, whatever. But like, in addition to that, there are two different sports, right? Like one of them prioritizes like the length and grace, and then, you know, the hand-eye coordination in particular, and I suppose lateral agility and vertical explosion as well. But like, then the other one, there's all the other elements of other, you know, aspects that it, so it's like, it's weird to compare them. I know we've seen some basketball players, you know, college ones, Rico Gaithers and Antonio Gates before that, you know, Gonzalez played some, Keon Coleman in this class was on Tom Izzo's class for a little bit, but you know, I mean, like, I don't know. It's like guys that can be skilled in that way and playing that, but like the number that he said, walk off the court right now and play, get out of here. Those guys, like, I think you probably have a better shot the other way if it was, you know, someone who was good, like in the NFL, because at least physically, you know, but like you have to have pretty high level technique and then the know-how of this is like, because the thing about the NFL, it's, you know, every single play, all the players' performance, they're intertwined with everyone else. One of the great things about evaluation is you have to watch them up close and in college and then try to unspool it from all the circumstances around them and each play and all the things that go into that. Whereas the basketball, it's more free flowing. It'd be tough to teach an NBA or the other way. Whereas at least we all know you step on a basketball court, everyone at least knows what to do. So it's like physically, could you hang? Would you have the skill? But stupid comments by Mr. Austin Rivers.
Yeah.
I think you could probably find a decent number of players who are like, hey, we're going to put you on a practice squad for 3 years and coach you into this, and you're going to be a backup tight end by the end of it. But I don't think that's what he meant by that.
No, I don't think he did.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah. I think you can argue for, you know, because there's the argument of like what sport has the best athletes on earth. And if you want to argue that for basketball, I'm not going to. Because it's like the guys who have the most unique dimensions. There's only so many, you know, 7-footers walking the earth right now, and the NBA basically took all the most athletic ones. And so it's like, yeah, I mean, in terms of some of that stuff, it's like, yeah, I get that. But I don't understand. We're comparing apples and oranges, and then we're trying to say that the orange is better, even though there's no way to prove that. It's just a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
By the way, when we're saying best athletes on the planet, I'm going to give a shout out to hockey players because they can do so much incredible stuff and they have to do it while skating. That has always blown my mind. So.
And the physicality there too. Yeah.
That one's wild to me. And the other thing for me is that I don't know if there's any NFL guys that walk into the NBA and play basketball only because I look at it this way, right? Steph Curry is 1 inch shorter than Randy Moss, right? Like, Steph Curry is one of the smallest guys on the basketball court. Randy Moss is one of the tallest guys on the football field. And you're talking about 1 inch separation. So, like, you take this big, physical, dominant wide receiver and put him in the NBA, and all of a sudden he's a shooting guard, right? And so, like, that's the only thing I look at and say, like, well, yeah, and the hand-eye coordination and stuff is difficult. And the very specialized thing, like, shooting is a very specialized technique. And so I understand it from that point of view. And, you know, you can make the case, and I was listening to a podcast earlier today, and they were saying, you know, Jordan Mulata was drafted without ever playing a snap of football, right? And so, like, I understand. I get it. Like, you can teach that guy eventually. But the level of physicality, right, the level of physical – I mean, these NBA guys can't take any physical contact. And the level of physical contact that has to be there, forget about a game. In a practice, right? Like, that to me is something that I don't know if any of these guys are prepared for, right? Like, Anthony Edwards looks like this big dominant guy dominating and going hard in the paint. You put him on a football field and, you know, let him run across the middle and let some safety take his head off. Like, And of course, it's a little different than it was, you know, 20 years ago. But still, you know, that's, you know, you ask him to crack back block, you know, come down and kick out at a defensive end or something like that. Like, that's just not happening, you know. And so that's the part where I look at it and say, look, man, I don't know. I think it would be more likely for an NBA guy to be able to make a switch into the NFL. But I just don't know if they could actually hang in the NFL. They might be able to, like, hey, you might look good in shorts and a t-shirt, you know, 7-on-7. You want to tell me it's flag football, 7-on-7 flag football? Absolutely. Those guys would be great. That's not what we're talking about. That's not the game. And so, you know, it's a different situation, right? You want to say, hey, you know, for the 7-on-7 Olympics, you know, if I'm Canada, shoot, I'm taking, you know, 3 NBA guys because I don't know anyone that plays football. Hey, you want to come play flag football in the Olympics for Canada? Absolutely, let's do it. You know, like, so, but again, you're talking about real football. I just, the physicality and the physical nature of it, I just don't think they're built for it.
Yeah, I think he was trying to say we're better athletes than NFL players. And I think if I was him, I just would have stuck to that because I totally agree with that. Like, even if, you know, you can project this specific athlete from the NBA. It's like, you know, like when LeBron, remember when he came out of high school and then yes. like it was yep. like a couple of years in, they were like, oh, he would have been like the best tight end ever. And it's like, well, maybe, but it's like, you know, to do that, you'd have to transition over and then you'd have to teach him all the routes and you know, what have you. It's not just about the athletic projection of it. Right. There's the NFL game. Especially at that position, but like, even like the ones that would project a receiver. I don't know if you guys saw this. There was a dude who put a tweet out right before the draft, and it was about the positions in the first round that have the highest bust rate. And he did it. He basically did it by who got second contract each position. Safest position was center. The only one bust was Billy Price, and then it was all the way down. Well, one of the ones that had the highest bust rate, it was wide receiver. And my supposition for that is because at that position, athletic traits are overvalued. You constantly see guys go, and maybe the NFL is getting a little, like A.D. Mitchell did fall to the middle of the set. That's around where he was on my board. I think I had him as a late second round guy, but like maybe they're getting somewhat better at this, but historically they will pump those guys way up at that position that are great athletes. But here's the thing. You don't get separation by being a better athlete than someone. You get it way more from subterfuge and efficiency of your footwork and keeping them off the beat of your sense, and then the efficiency in and out, then the acceleration out. It's the whole package of that. But like, why did Puka Nacua go at the end of the fifth round last year? Because he's not a great athlete when you put on the shorts and then you know, you have to do the test or whatever. But on a football field, when you're in pads and then there's all the concepts as well that you have to, he becomes, with the tracking data, it plays way up. Because there's no hesitancy. Like he understands, like he's got like a supercomputer at it. And this is why he always gets separation, even though the guy covering him invariably, if they went back and put on their shorts and they went onto the track, would be a better athlete than him objectively on the track field. But he doesn't move as well on the field or as fluidly, or, you know, and he's getting tricked by Puka over and over again, taking false steps. And Puka's like, gotcha. And now you're getting stacked and bye-bye. You know, and they get hit on the hands and, you know, now he sees everyone, you know, like it's just that sort of stuff. And I think that's the thing where Austin Rivers, you probably just should have, you want to make the argument they're better athletes, do that. I think you could do that. But like the thing of like, we could just start sending guys over there and they're going to be NFL standouts, right? I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Discounting the intricacies of the game, you know,
for sure. So,
but it is what it matters. Is. Exactly. Exactly. And that's what I'm talking about. That's a great segue. That's a great way to finish, because that's my argument for the Jalen Polk pick is that, hey, listen, he may not be the greatest athlete in the world, but I do believe that he has that high ceiling, that high floor, that it will allow the Patriots to at least have a guy that is competent at the wide receiver position, which they haven't been able to draft in a long time. So, that's where I'm at.
On at receiver, because it's so technique heavy, development in the NFL can make a difference there too. You're not just who you are when you come in. And like, from everything I've read, it seems like the best way to approach wide receivers is just draft a lot of them. Like you can find them in any round, you can find them in any spot, you can find them with basically any combine performance. Just kind of keep taking shots. So we all talk about the Steelers. It's a great wide receiver drafting team. go on Pro Football Reference and go look at the Steelers' drafts at wide receiver. Look how many busts there are in there. There are so many of them. But they just keep, like every other year, a second or a third rounder, they'll keep investing. And if, you know, a quarter of those guys hit, you have good receivers.
For sure. Yeah,
exactly. So, all right. Well, Thor, this has been a ton of fun. As always, before we let you go, you need to tell the people where they can read you and see you and hear you and everything else.
They're probably sick of me by now with that discussion we just had. But everyone who came in and watched appreciated at least hearing me out. And again, I hope I'm wrong. And when I am, then you can come in. I'll say it. I'll apologize. And all my misses, hand up on it. I don't hype for that stuff. So I hope I am wrong. But I appreciate you guys having me. It's always awesome to talk to you. You can find me on Twitter, ThorKU. And then like the UDFA stuff that I was talking about and all that sort of stuff, my post-draft stuff is on Fantasy Pros.
Love it. I love it. So, well, thank you so much again, and we're going to have you on again next year for the draft recap, and hopefully you'll be apologizing already about the F from this year, and we'll see what the grade looks like next year. So
hopefully. It's become a yearly tradition, and I've been higher on Patriots, grades in the past. So the guy that was saying, like, it was for clicks or I don't like New England or whatever, it's like, it's just, it's right. Year in, year out thing, but yeah.
Oh, I remember.
We'll be back either way.
I think, 2022 – they drafted Cole Strange in the first round. I don't think you like that. But I remember 2021, you're like, oh, yeah, Mac Jones. You got Christian Barmore. I think they got an A in that year's draft. And that one didn't work out as well. But, yeah, it is what it is. So what are you going to do? So
I like Strange more than most that year. I might not have had him as a first round on my board, but I was higher on him. I think I had him as a second rounder, than other folks.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't remember you hating that draft. So anyways, but nevertheless. So we'll do it again next year. I'm already looking forward to it. And thank you again, Thor, and everyone out there. Appreciate you guys. Thank you for coming through. Also, someone asked about what we thought about the Brady roast. We actually did that on Monday. So if you want to go back to our in the annals of PNN here, we do have that show. You can listen to it if you want to go back and look at that. So anyways, thank you very much. And thanks again, Thor. Thanks to everyone else. And we will see you guys on Monday. Of next week, unless something crazy comes up. Schedule coming out next Wednesday. Pretty exciting. Pretty exciting. So we didn't even get into your Viking store, but what are you gonna do? It's it's okay. They crushed the draft, in my opinion. So
nobody wants to hear my JJ McCarthy takes anymore, especially now that he's on the Vikings. So it's
best, we didn't have best case scenario for you. It's great. If it works out, it's gonna be the best thing ever. And
or I'm gonna get run out of my state if it doesn't.
I was gonna be
it's a high stakes game we're playing over here for sure.
Just make sure you keep refreshing his Zillow just in case.
Yeah, I will. That's right.
Yeah. Hey, where's some room? We'll take you here in New England if you want. There's some room for you. Okay.
Yeah, so. If they forgive me after that, then for sure. I'll be down there.
All right, guys. Thanks, man. We'll talk to you.
Appreciate it.